And we're back. Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And with us, joining us, is Ted Schmidt. And he has a great blog called theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com. And he wrote a memoir, which is very readable, full of all kinds of interesting projects and reflecting the work, his work, called Never Neutral. And well, welcome to the program, Ted.
Great to be back, Phil.
Good to see you. Now, by the way, you've really been very active. Your blog is extremely readable. I really urge people to get it, theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com. And I find it refreshing because what I read there reminds me of that wonderful period within the Catholic faith that was called, and actually I guess Protestants, called liberation theology. Is that what you're writing reflect sort of the school that we came under that rubric?
Well, it's also the cardinal point of Judaism. You know, Judaism comes out of the Exodus movement. That's the fundamental story of the Jewish people, and that nobody should live under oppression. And, of course, that flows through the prophets of Israel and also through Jesus of Nazareth, and it's a cardinal point of Christianity, should be, and we seem to be getting...
I'm glad you raised that, because I always noticed that the story of Exodus in some ways was like the militant bricklayers. Mm-hmm. They were worked over... They had no time off. When they said, we have a holy day, the Pharaoh said, no, you don't.
That's right.
You've got to go to work.
That's right.
And they even got into the fight over putting straw into the mud.
Yeah. No, that's certainly in the Bible. And I guess the reason I'm so...
So they went for the 40-hour week.
They did, and less. Mm-hmm. I guess the reason I'm so passionate about it is that I grew up in a very strong Jewish neighborhood and still do have a great love for Jewish people and also the state of Israel. And as I say, as a friend of the state, I owe it my concern. And I've often used the analogy, if I had an alcoholic brother, I wouldn't keep feeding him alcohol. I would try to get him help. Yes. So I'm in that group of people who, you know, as I wrote one blog piece, as you know, is that I called myself a Catholic Zionist. Mm-hmm. That we were so excited, you know, with the state of Israel and people in my neighborhood. And the Palestinians had no voice. I never heard, I never knew a Palestinian. To me, they were exotic people on camels. Mm-hmm. Until I started, to be aware.
Bedouin.
Yes.
The Bedouin vision. Yeah.
Of what was happening. And when I went to Israel the first time in 1990, a friend of mine said, you're going to have your heart broken. Because we know your great love, of the Jewish people, and you're going to see a state that's basically an oppressive state. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to call myself a Groucho Marxist.
Yeah.
You know, Groucho's famous line is, who do you believe, me or your eyes? Yeah. So I've seen it. And people like Jimmy Carter have seen it. And by the way, many, many great Israeli critics have seen it, and they're starting to speak out.
I think I would... No, I have to work on that. I'm a grouchy Marxist.
Okay.
and I'm very grouchy about the Marxists getting with each other. But what your column points out, and very eloquently, by the way, not when I say column, the columns, that many of the original Zionist visionaries had the same problem you did, actually.
Yes.
Some of them were, when they got there, raised the issue right away. Well, what are we going to do now? I didn't realize that the population was this large.
That's right.
Et cetera. And what are we going to do? And so that was a great moral dilemma. And they didn't cease to be Zionists, but at least they had addressed that.
Yeah, I mean, when you read the history of that part of the world in 1897, when Herzl had his vision of bringing Jewish people to a safe haven, there were only 3% of that area that was Jewish. It was an Islamic people, Muslim people, some Christians for sure. And then they realized what was happening is it was slowly becoming a Jewish state. And there was the great liberal Zionists like Judah Magnus and people like that that saw what was happening. And they were culture. They were progressive people. They weren't imperialists.
Yes.
And their hearts started to break. We said, well, what about these people that are here? We didn't know there were people here. Mm-hmm. Were people there? And then we, you know, we go through the 30s and we see the beginning of riots in that part of the world, and then partition in 47, and then the State of Israel in 1948, and the displacement of 750,000 Palestinians.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, that was, that is something which was not remarked on for decades,
practically. No.
And it's interesting how we've had to slowly go back, and, you know, it's kind of like if you make a wrong turn on the road and you get lost, you better go back to where you made the wrong turn.
Yeah, it wasn't mentioned. And I guess the reason was we were people of the West. We knew nothing about these people. We were so enthused that these people who came out of the Holocaust,
World War II,
had a homeland. And the Palestinians became invisible. They could not get a hearing. And so, tragically, like all liberation movements, they went to violence.
Yes.
And that was the beginning.
Well, and it's also the issue of the unsavory quality of many of their leaders who were, you know, we have a problem sometimes of not being sympathetic to a people because whoever we are seeing is representing them, we say, oh, I don't like him. But that really actually has nothing to do with the people themselves.
No.
Actually, that's really, we could get into that phenomenon now with Netanyahu. Netanyahu isn't a terribly attractive guy.
No.
But there is, within Israel, there's a debate where there are people who really were ready to entertain some other way of solving this matter with
the commentariat, the people who love Israel and are concerned about it. I'm speaking largely of American Jews that have been tremendously supportive of the American state. It's really lit up. The articles in major newspapers everywhere. The whole idea that occupation does not go with liberal Zionist values. Forget about 1897. Let's go with 1948, mm-hmm. when you see a total people displaced. You have 500 Arab villages bulldozed over, given new names, and we're supposed to forget it. Well, they didn't forget it. They were people that had some love for their own homeland. They'd only been there for 12 centuries.
Yeah.
And so this is the part that is really bothering American Zionists.
Mm-hmm.
They were very progressive people. They were Democrats, and they were hoping that the new state would be, in Hebrew, Lor Gayim. It's right out of Isaiah, that we would be a new country. And, you know, when I was...
A light unto the nations.
A light unto the nations. And now, in 1948, in May 15th in 1948, I mean, just listen to the declaration of the State of Israel. Mm-hmm. It says this: it will be based on freedom, justice, and peace as envisaged by the prophets of Israel. It will ensure complete equality of social and political rights to all the inhabitants, irrespective of religion, race, or sex. Well, that sure hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
And woe betide honest people that point this out.
Yeah.
In Israel, there's a much more vigorous dialogue. I mean, you read the columns of Gideon Levy, Amir Ahas.
Yes.
And many, many people are pointing this out.
Haaretz.
And Haaretz, you see. And if it's raised here, I mean, I am really shocked at the most liberal brand of Judaism, Reform Judaism. 1,900 rabbis descended on the poor Presbyterian Church when they decided to divest and boycott,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, a traditional non-violent tactic to bring people to their senses. And the only thing that changed those Presbyterians were young Jews showing up with T-shirts saying, no, these people are yesterday's people. We are people that the Holocaust has receded in mm-hmm. memory. The Holocaust is over, or as one of their great writers in Israel says, genetic Judaism isn't good enough anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get to the justice. And it's young people are abandoning the synagogues in major numbers because they see older people that are trying to flog a dead narrative.
Yeah. We're speaking to Ted Schmidt. By the way, the site is theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com. By the way, Ted, we did not note, but we ought to make sure that we do, that you were one of the teachers in the and in the Catholic system that introduced the importance or initiated the original teaching of the Holocaust experience.
Yes.
And made it part of the curriculum.
Well, I think I was the first in Canada in the late 60s. I don't know anybody who did the work that I did and then was embraced by the Jewish community and the Holocaust Remembrance community. I did workshops mm-hmm. for them and spoke in many, many synagogues. At that time, I was a great friend.
Yeah.
Because I did this as an
act of
preparation.
Well, you must still be a great friend. It's
well,
just that there's a debate now that wants to somehow
that's right.
negate what your point of view.
Well, one major rabbi told me that you used to be our friend. And I said, well, this is ridiculous. I will always be. That's not negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
I have a two-pronged solidarity for the safety of the state of Israel. That's a given. But also, as a Christian, to the oppressed people there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the oppressed people there are the Arabs of,
yeah.
of Palestine.
Yeah. And also, you raising, and of course you're touching on this, the way this debate has gone, and particularly since it's dominated on one side but by the sort of posture and attitude of Mr. Netanyahu, we're seeing a strange phenomenon of in Israel, demonstrations in which it's not, you know, some of these people say, well, you know, there is a rise, a visible rise in anti-Arab racism where people openly talk about removing the Palestinian people from Israel itself or,
yes.
or removing them from the West Bank, Gaza.
Yes.
But the other sign that they're carrying, and they and speak with the same fervor, is death to the left, which I find really strange. How people reach a point where they're actually using this odd term, the left, and talking about killing people.
Yes, it's been shocking to Israel watchers, and I only quote Israeli and Jewish sources. Some of the finest writers there, excuse me, are talking about this increased racism, this ethnocentrism that just totally denies what I just read earlier as the Declaration of the State of Israel in 1948. I mean, people rampaging through the streets of Haifa and Jerusalem, death to the Arabs. And you've had a million Russians that have come in to Israel. And by the way, it was Bill Clinton says half of the problem there is the number of Russians who have come in. Very cruel, very harsh.
Mm-hmm.
They sit at checkpoints, and they are nasty pieces of work. And so you have this Moldavian bouncer who is mm-hmm. now their foreign minister, and they're getting more and more, giving people more and more freedom to rampage through the streets. And this is so embarrassing because they got some great novelists, poets, and writers there, and they're just getting disgusted with the way the state is moving.
Yeah. And also this ideological thing. You say this is creating a crisis of for the that figure called the liberal Zionist.
Yes, it is.
And I think you commented on an article appeared in the New York Review of Books on
yes.
the subject. Can you expand on that?
Yes. There was a –
And this is Ted Schmidt, by the way. I want you to know.
This was a man named Anthony Lerman that really broke it open. And since then – He put my blog on there. I think I was the only Christian writer that he put on there. There had been 24 responses to him, you know, in major Jewish centers like New Jersey, Washington, particularly New York City. And he really wore his heart on his sleeve. This is what he said. Pushed to the political margins in Israel and increasingly irrelevant in the diaspora, liberal Zionism not only lacks agency, worse, it provides cover for the supremacist Zionism dominant mm-hmm. in Israel today.
That's a New York Review book.
Yes. Liberal Zionists have become an obstacle to the emergence of a diaspora Jewish movement that could actually be an agent of change. And mm-hmm. he calls this shock and awe militarism. The latest assault on Gaza, a disproportionate orgy of wanton murder, the third assault on defenseless Gazans in 8 years has broken many. It cannot be reconciled with their humanism. And I think, you know, when I look back at this film, you know, in 1948, there was no television. There was no internet. So the Palestinians could be hid. But now people going, you know, with blogs, with cameras, and even Israeli filmmakers,
yes.
you can't hide anymore.
What's it called? The broken cameras.
Somebody broke five broken cameras.
And that ended up being backfired on the people who broke the cameras.
That's right. So we took a look at those 519 children in coffins. And you have this beautiful writer, Gideon Levy, Israel went into paroxysms of grief when one four-year-old boy was killed. And all of us should go into paroxysm of grief when a four-year-old boy who will never see the future, I don't care if he's Jewish or Israeli, but then he said, what kind of a country are we where we don't shed a tear over 519 Gazan children? Mm-hmm. And when we see it, and with Al Jazeera and all of the cameras and the TV networks, and more you're seeing this on American networks. They used to be censored, but now they're getting in there and they're showing this. Yes. And it's just too much. You know, the liberal Zionists, these beautiful people in Israel and around the world say, that's it. Mm-hmm. We have to come to terms with the occupation. And if we can solve this, we can solve almost the whole problem with the Muslim world, because that is a sticking point. As you know, Muslims have this idea of ummah. What is a part of all Muslims is a part of me. Mm-hmm. And as you know, the mad bomber himself, who bombed the buildings in New York in 9/11, he said this was his big problem, was Israel. Mm-hmm. And the way these people are being treated. So I think that's a real crisis time. It's not the end of Zionism, but they're asking questions that could never have been asked even 5 years ago.
Yeah, well, by the way, we hear reports. I understand that, for example, something I never thought we'd see. There's going to be a debate between Naomi Klein and this Rabbi Shmuel.
Oh.
I mean, that's going to be an event.
Yes.
Doing my homework to interview you, Ted Schmidt, I noticed that Theodore Bekel, a very beloved figure, we all know him from the his role.
Right.
In a Shalom Aleichem performance, he's written a statement where he said, and it very actually echoes what you're saying. He said, when I was with my father, he said, and he was getting older, he made me promise, he said, that I would continue the fight for Zionism and for the kibbutzim.
Right.
And he said, I have to tell him that both have been corrupted now, and I can't do that.
Wow.
Theodore Bekel is 90 years old.
90.
And now, again, when you see this, I suppose the best way to look would be to say, well, something really healthy is going on, right?
Yes.
Because, I mean, you're citing the New York Review of Books.
Yes, and it's in Washington Post.
And there's a site like Mondo Weiss.
Mondo Weiss is brilliant. An American Jew who puts the best material out. I really recommend that, Mondo Weiss. And many other blogs are out there, and we didn't see this many years ago. Mm-hmm. With the Internet now, it's coming into awareness. And as you say, Phil, you got to go back in history and say, why is this happening? Yeah. Well, the Palestinians aren't invisible anymore.
Well, I think I've found it heartening. On this program, I interviewed Fred Jerome, who's written three or four books about Albert Einstein, and particularly Albert Einstein's involvement with the Zionists and his struggles with them.
Yeah.
It really would have, he says, pointed out, that when all the other biographies of Einstein didn't discuss the fact that he actively debated with people, and he condemned, actually, Menachem Begin.
He sure did.
As you know, Albert Einstein wrote a letter saying, don't bring this guy because he's a terrorist.
That's right.
And he saw him as hurtful to the cause of the Jewish people.
Yeah.
But it really would have helped if all those biographers had told us he had said that so that we could have thought about that point.
Well, many prominent Jews are saying this, and they're saying this out of love. Not out of hatred.
Tell me about Peter Baynard. He made a nice comment. I noticed he said that this is not the period of colonialism. We're not in a period where people believe that colonial projects are great things anymore.
Yes, he's.
I thought that was a very helpful insight.
Yeah, it is a good insight. He's one of the better writers, American Jew, who's written a book on Zionism. It's in all the libraries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I go back and I think of the terrible way that the great rabbi of Toronto, Reuben Slonim, was treated. Mm-hmm. Reuben, he lost a couple of pulpits here because he'd been to Israel 20 times. And this was after the 67 war. He said, we've become a chauvinist people, you know that. And he went to his, I was a good friend of Reuben's, and he went to his grave being hounded every day by hate messages and people standing up in his synagogue and screaming, Arab lover.
Yeah, no, by the way, that's a sin.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to say to the person, could you just repeat that again? What would be my problem with it?
Yeah.
But we're talking to Ted Schmidt. Ted Schmidt has a great blog, I guess we call them now, Theology in the Vineyard, .wordpress.com. What about the, within your faith, there's quite a, we've been living through a period here. Matter of fact, last time we talked to you, there was a new pope. Mm-hmm. How is he impacted on this subject?
Remember, he shocked people by stopping at the wall and praying at the separation wall, because many, many now people in Israel don't want to even see Arabs. So you put these 30-foot wall up. Mm-hmm. You don't want to talk to these people. You don't want to see them. So you have people like Amira Haas, who wrote this brilliant column. This woman, this Jewish woman, whose mother survived Belsen, her mother said to her, we were shamed. People walked by us in Belsen. And he says, I want you to grow up, never turn your back on people who are suffering. So here's this Jewish woman who lived in Gaza, now lives in the West Bank, and she wrote this column. She says, you're 15 minutes away from the most oppressed people in the Middle East. Why don't you see? Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to push people and to make them the other. But that's what the Nazis did. They become Untermenschen, subhuman people. They're really not like us. Mm-hmm. And it was the great Jewish philosopher, Yeshayahu Leibowitz, who coined the expression Judeo-Nazis about these settlers. Now, that's a Jew saying, this isn't what Jews do. Mm-hmm. This is not what Jews do, treat people like this, rip up their orchards, harass them on their way to school. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited by these voices within Judaism. Yes. And as you know, Henry Ziegman has been on a Democracy Now!, this beautiful rabbi. He's basically weeping, saying, you know, when I go into synagogue today, I don't hear Isaiah, the great prophet of peace. I hear people talking about Israel. Mm-hmm. Well, that's idolatry. That's the fundamental sin of Scripture. Is when you take something that's dead and turn it into an idol.
Yes. And by the way, and just to bring it back to the Pope, that was an issue that the Catholic Church was having itself. And it's perhaps put itself on a better road now. We had two popes who seemed to be not terribly interested in suffering people. They seemed to be, as you pointed out, they were more interested in women and sex, two things they don't know anything about.
Yeah, that seemed to be our obsession as
Catholics.
Pardon
the sarcasm.
Well, what we call pelvic orthodoxy. So, yeah, now there's a new pope, but, you know, also in place are the same type of bishops that were favored.
And they're debating Vatican II, right?
Well, Vatican II.
That's what the battle is about.
That is the battle, whether the church is going to be engaged in history, engaged on the side of those who have no voice. As the pope said, you got to have the smell of the sheep on you. In other words, get into history. Go to the margins where the poor are. Raise them up. Mm. Well, it's not too... You don't have to be a genius to see who the poor and the oppressed are in Israel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's given people a lot of hope. Well, we'll see where that goes. But so many people...
Well, when you look at this, I mean, you made a good point about, you know, this business of walking past. We have a phenomenon, and I refer to it a lot on this program, about in Canadian politics, we do a lot of shunning. We have elected members of parliament who go to Israel, but they don't go to Gaza.
No.
Or if they do, they have a kind of special little escort service where they see go and see a leader, say, oh, I saw him.
Yeah.
I haven't heard any member of parliament wanted to go to Gaza and just determine sort of the facts on the ground. We don't have that.
You're absolutely right. We don't have enough Groucho Marxists. The people who go and see and taste. And that's really part of Talmudic and Torah thinking. You know, you got to walk in the shoes. Well, I've stopped debating some Jewish friends of mine. I said, look, I can't talk to you. I've seen it. Have you been there? Mm-hmm. Have you seen it? Have you walked through checkpoints? Have you witnessed this humiliation that's ongoing on a day-to-day basis? No.
Oh, by the way, you also cite a great book, My Enemy, Myself.
This was a stunning book.
There's a man who did what you're proposing to do.
Yes, I'm glad you brought up. His name's Yoram Binur. He wrote a book called My Enemy, Myself. And he did what John Howard Griffin went. He went as a Jew into the occupied territories and saw how abysmally he was treated because he had a beautiful Arabic accent. And that shocked Israel. But there's been great writers who have done the same. And Grossman wrote a book where he did the same. He's Israel's premier novelist. He wrote 7 weeks. He went into Gaza, and he went in, I think, the occupied territories, and he wrote a shocking book about the racism, how Arabs were treated.
Yeah. We're talking to Ted Schmidt. We're at the last moment here. I want to make sure that I ask you. Is it Edith Wharton you quote? That's a lovely quote. You have Edith Wharton talking about how you have to get it has to be in your fiber.
It's got to be in your fiber.
You
gotta
can't
feel
get it from
it.
A book.
You know, you got to smell it. And you're right. When Canadians go over there, they don't go and see it. They're escorted around. They're taken to the Holocaust Museum so that more guilt can be piled onto them so they won't be critical. Well, you have to. If you love something as deeply as I do about Israel, you know, you want the best for it.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I really urge you, go to this website, Theology in the Vineyard, great title, theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com. It's Ted Schmidt, and you will learn and improve yourself. This is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report. Thanks, Andy. We'll see everybody next week.